And you may ask yourself, what in God's holy name are they blathering about? Well, it's live from the Five Hole Faxes from UncleDale.com's weekly podcast, and we're going to spend the next hour showing you what we've been blathering about. I am Sam Fells, your host.
She kidnapped herself, man.
Of the Sam Fells, but who's buying newsletter. We are refreshed. We are relaxed. Well, I don't know if we're relaxed, but we're definitely refreshed. We're raring to go after a week off. We all had a lovely holiday, I assume. I didn't hear John and Slack didn't have a lovely holiday. I saw Matt, so I know that he did. And we hope that you did too. But now it's time to get back to the routine. So, of course, we're in fatal four-way formation. We have lots to discuss with the usual crew. Leading off with the biggest jackass, no tail in the business. He's Dr. Viral, and he's the CEO of WBCW on Wrestling Brain's Twitch channel every Monday night at 9 Central. You can find him on Blue Sky at Torque Penderloin. He's Andrew Cieslak.
Wang Lee Chung tonight.
You're getting your flowers for that. You don't fucking care.
Nope. We're going to make it happen.
I got to say, Slack, one of the skills in stand-up that I wish I had that I never did, that I always admired in some other comedians who were able to do it, was the ability to just sit on a joke that you knew was good. Like, it mostly only happened at open mics, but sometimes I saw a show where they do something, it didn't really hit, and you just stand there until it gets the response you want.
Waggle your eyebrows or just
stone-faced? Yeah, I mean, like, you just kind of give the audience a look. You're like, no, that's funny, and you're going to come with me on it. And after a few seconds, there are guys who could, or gals who could make that work. It was a skill I never had. If something I did didn't work, I folded like a flan in a cover. The rest of the set was shot. So, anyway, I digress. He's working the ones and twos for us tonight. He is our supervising technician and our technical supervisor. You can find him on Blue Sky at Matt McClure, but please don't. It's Matt McClure.
Hail Satan.
Hail Satan, indeed. And last but not least, he is the archivist. He is the Goal Line Assassin. He is the Oracle of Humboldt Park. You can't find him on Blue Sky at Fifth Feather, but he might find you because he's always lurking in the night in the abyss. It's Fifth Feather John.
Hello?
Or was.
Oh, like, the hamster fell off the wheel. I'm back.
Oh, you're back. Okay, good.
I just wanted to say I take my shirt off after every Bears win, but also my pants.
You take your shirt off after lunch.
Sometimes.
I'm so excited. I gotta let it out.
Yep. All right. The hamster's back on the wheel. We should be fine.
Let us say that Ben is only paying homage to Fifth Feather John.
Correct.
By removing clothes after winning.
We know people are listening.
Yep. He knows that John is running down California naked. Now, he's not ready to make that commitment yet.
No. And he needs a lightsaber.
But soon enough, John will be out there with Ben Johnson, and the two of them will be gallivanting down California.
Well, yeah, but only southbound, because northbound is blocked with all sorts of construction these days.
Is it? North in California, no good.
No, don't do it.
Don't do it. Bad.
Very bad.
We're letting the kids a little, we're letting them, like, know, but too close where you are. They shouldn't know exactly where you are.
No, yeah, let them guess a little bit.
Yeah, let them guess a little bit. So now they know you're south of north, but that's, we'll leave it at that.
South of heaven. We don't know where John is.
We don't want them to know exactly where he is.
You know. His nickname is the Oracle of Humboldt Park.
Right, but Humboldt Park's a big area.
It's a big park.
Is it?
It's a big park.
Is it?
I think when people refer to the neighborhood of Humboldt Park, it covers some ground. Yeah.
I don't know. The homing devices are tuning in.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to find you.
The only people who have homing devices on John is his wife.
Yeah, sadly.
So, to let people in behind the curtain, we briefly discussed not taking last week off because the Bears-Steelers game had so much in it. We thought, oh, at least I thought, oh, wait, maybe... maybe we should get and discuss it out. There was a lot in the aftermath. And boys, let me tell you, I had this whole three-pronged theory, argument to make about watching the Bears at ground level and 35,000 feet and the level in between and the confusion that causes and what means for what and what something means for another and how I feel like fans and beat writers are getting that all screwed up. But we decided to take the week off. I'm like, oh, I'll save it after the Eagles game, and then it'll fit. And then after the Eagles game happened, and the only thought I have is, Bears! I don't have any overarching theories. I don't have any deep-seated things I need to get out. I'm not trying to explain anything. I'm not trying to figure out what the definition of anything is. I don't fucking care. I'm just excited. I cannot wait for Sunday. I know they're probably going to lose because I've been down this road before where you get really excited about the Bears. You think a leaf is turning and here comes the big bad monster and they squash all our dreams or whatever. But it's just so heartening to be excited for a big Bears game again. Well, like a big Bears Packers game again. When was the last time both these teams were good? I can't even remember.
John's house.
That was the first game of the year.
Were the Packers even good in 2018? I feel like they weren't.
They were fine. They didn't win the division that year, clearly. But also, let the record show that Sam is taking Sam is taking his inspiration for just yelling Bears randomly from some old rummy at our bar.
Wait a minute. I've been yelling Bears for years. Now, the old rummy may be doing it out in public and better than I am. But that doesn't mean I'm taking cues from him. I'm just yelling it because I
want
to yell
it. But he made it okay for you to do it at least this week, in this interregnum.
Indeed.
Between Friday evening and Sunday at 3:25.
Anyway, last time these two were both playoff teams, and we don't count 2020, was 2010. We don't need to talk about how that ended.
This is old shit, man. I'm telling you right now, none of that is relevant.
And I'm just saying, this is like the biggest
shit out of their minds.
This is the biggest Bears Packers game in a very long time.
Yes,
there's every reason to be excited for it. And I'm not saying, oh, it's great to have the rivalry back, because the rivalry's never really been this. I'm not going to pull a fucking Sean Gallagher when the Blues finally got good. None of that shit. But it is like,
who's he?
Heartening, who the hell is he? That this game means something. And the number one crew, 3:25 start, sun setting in Wisconsin, whole thing. Can't wait.
Yeah. I think the best thing that everybody can do is leave their baggage at the door. But it'll be impossible to do that.
Well,
the
owner's not letting them. He's giving them the fucking PowerPoint presentation. Have we seen this? Have you heard about this? Where fucking creepy George is gassing everyone up on tepid milk. And he's going to sit them down to all the new guys, rookies and newcomers, and personally explain to them the weight of history.
Yeah, but you got to let George have this, right?
His name's on the checks.
I didn't see that. I did not see that, nor did I hear about that. But
I mean, this is his thing, right?
Like
if the rookies and new guys can give up 20 minutes of their day to let the guy who signs the checks just have his thing, right?
Yeah,
I'm sure
yeah.
that's what Ben Johnson's telling them. Like, look, guys, just go in there. With a good sense of humor.
Nod your head. Yeah.
Nod your head. This was really
yes,
important.
Sir. Yes,
he's
sir.
The boss. Just do it.
Thank you, Mr.
Don't
McCaskey.
Make a face. Yeah. Anyway, John's got his bursting yellow pad. Slack's been like slowly vibrating for about 10 days now.
I did not hear about this with George sitting the men down to tell them. The
Bro, sit the men down. Yo,
God. Now I feel like I'm off the tracks. But, that Eagles game was about as satisfying as a Bears win as I can remember.
There's nothing better than a big Bears win that comes out of nowhere. Now, like, I know Slacks, like, this game's going to be competitive. I think the Bears are going to win. They got a great chance.
0-17.
But, like, while also being the 0-17 guy.
I have the facts now. Thank you.
But them steamrolling the Eagles came out of nowhere. Like, no one saw that.
Well,
no.
What made it also, and I'll let you go in a second too, John. What made it special. It wasn't just here's the defending Super Bowl champs in their house. They're either going to be so pissed off about blowing a lead to the Cowboys that they're going to come out and kill us, or it's a cauldron of negativity that you can, you know, sort of feed off of. But it's on national TV. It's the only game on. Everybody's going to be watching it. And everybody's wondering if the Bears are real or are they frauds. And so they just, like, answered every question that you could ask of them in front of everyone. And it's and it made them the talk of the entire football world, mostly in positive light, which is amazing. It feels like the only people who are still left with questions are people who live in this city, which I don't get, and we'll get to that. But for now, I think we should bask in the win a little bit more. So, John, feel free to take from there.
Yeah, no, I think going into the game, I started to feel better about it the more I thought about it. And the thing with Philadelphia, with the Eagles in particular, is that
John,
I guess, and I didn't know the team was going to show up that day. I mean, I had a feeling that they were going to struggle during parts, but I was just, my fear was that they were going to turn it on at some point. And that just never happened.
Well, they were driving. They had John, you and I called it in the thread. Like, as soon as they got out from under, instantaneously out from under, like, the shadow of the goalpost, or like, they're scoring this drive and it's not even going to be. Yeah.
Right.
And then they were about ready to do it again. And then, you know, and then they got, you know, hoisted on their own petard with the tush push. You get, like, you know, last week the Bears, against the Steelers, get got for what, a 55 yarder off of a tush push, and then this week with the fucking inventors and proprietors and purveyors of it, they take the ball away. So who can figure it
Tellers
out?
Tellers and portrayers.
Right. Yeah, I mean I don't want to downplay the importance of that moment,
because the Eagles were like, it looked like they were about to, like, they effectively tied it, and then, you know, they boned
it.
That
felt like a
point
field
too.
Goal though, like it they were going to get stuffed on that play. Like, Hurts was behind, they were going to stuff him on that play, so it was still going to be a fourth down, and they would have had to decide whether to kick it or do it again.
It was like at the 35 ish
a little closer, I think they
it's
were
still, but
the
wind
20.
Obviously was wacky.
Right, so it's still like, if Philadelphia had not fumbled it there, I think it may have been a closer game. But yeah, I mean, it just felt like the Bears were in control of that game the entire time. And,
especially in the first half, what, almost 200 rushing yards in the first fucking half.
Right.
They also, I mean, they literally defeated the myth of the tush push in front of everybody as well, which is, it's just, it's, there were so many like little wins in the win.
Absolutely. Which never happens.
Never.
We should also note that for Chicago Bears football, that never happens.
Like you said,
it happens in our imaginations. We think about it during the best show of the year and the second best show of the year. Those are always our hypothesis of like how those our games are going to go. And
did you just say hypothesis?
Hypothesis, I said, but it did sound.
They have those out in LA now, or mm-hmm. Baltimore.
Uh-huh. I thought that this is some like a different type of Greek scientific method that I wasn't aware of.
No. Hypothesis. But it never goes that way, the way we want it to. And then that game, I think the only thing that could have been better was that they put up like a 30 or 40 on them. That would be the only way that it would have been like, okay. Yeah. But nevertheless, like in terms of reality, I don't know that I could recall a more satisfying Bears win in the last 20 years.
I mean, don't get me wrong. During portions of it, I was definitely yelling at my TV.
Itchy. Yes, they're all itchy. You're never going to get out of the itch, I fear.
That's not
so
the point.
Close. Yeah. They're always close, and they're not even that. They're close when they're not close, because you're just like one score from it all of a sudden being closer than you want it to be. And we know that the two-minute drill is so fast now, especially at the end of games. We've already seen them blow an onside kick, so there's all kinds of terror lurking around corners.
Right, but this team, which Bears teams don't do, like no Bears, I mean not even the good Bears teams did this, which is, okay, the Eagles tie quote-unquote the game, they miss the extra point, and now the Bears make you pay for making that mistake. Like, they come down and they open it up, And all of a sudden that biffed extra point matters. And I've seen it too many times from the other side. Like, they get two more touchdowns. Caleb throws that killer, you know, okay, it's 24-9, and then they make it more interesting. But, like, that's what the beauty of having a three-score lead is that, you know, you can give up a score and it's still mm-hmm. within your hands. That was, I found that to be the most, because, like, they played so well, they were really dominating the game, but the score didn't reflect it. They found a way to keep it close. And it's like, oh, here are the Bears doing that thing again where they find a way to keep this game closer than it should be when they should be well ahead. Now it's 10-9. Here we go. Seen this movie. And it wasn't that movie. It was a new movie. It was a totally different movie.
They're making less mistakes. What we've always said in years past is the Bears have always made more mistakes and mistakes when they matter. And they're not doing that this year. And I think that needs to be celebrated and enjoyed. Certainly during this run that they're having right now. I mean, that doesn't mean that it won't flip right back when they play Cleveland the following week. So,
yeah, I mean, they're still, I mean, every NFL team is capable of laying an egg. Look at the Rams.
Yep.
You know, but.
Well, no, apparently the Packers have solved their offensive problems because they beat up on Detroit, which apparently no one can do, but. The Green Bay solved their offensive problems now. Just ask them.
Oh, yeah, it's all over.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's all different. We'll get to Green Bay. We'll get to it. But anyway, further down the dueling yellow pads of Slack and John.
Yeah, I mean, I am still. Basking in it. I don't know, like, how much people don't understand how much fun this should be. Like, if you are not having a good time with this, or if you're micro analyzing things or thinking about things that might go wrong, you are wasting your time, sir or ma'am.
I mean look, by any definition, the season is already a success. Like okay, it would be very disappointing if they were to go 0-6 from here on out, 0-5, sorry, and finish 9-8. Like, then it wouldn't feel like the season's success. But even 9-8 for where this team was and what they're where they are is like a huge step forward.
If they finish 9-8, it's not going to feel like that.
And I don't think they're going to finish 9-8. To be fair, but
no, if they finish 9-8, then you know they have fatal flaws somewhere that they're going to have to address in the offseason. And it'll be
which
very
we knew already.
Right. It'll be very obvious whatever those fatal flaws should be. So they're in such a good spot right now. Even if whatever flaw does appear, if whenever they do lose or, you know, happen to lose in the playoffs, if that even happens at this point, everyone will. Because their defense isn't that good, because they need to shore up the defensive line, whether they need to still get in sync in the passing game, whatever it is, it'll become quite a.
John, you're cutting in and out here. Let's pause and let you reboot and do whatever.
Enjoyable spot right now. So if you're sitting here worried about, if you're sitting here worried about like what's going to happen, or you know that they're just been getting lucky and their luck's going to run out eventually, you know, go sit down.
John, you're cutting in and out big time here. You need to reboot, pal. So I don't know. I don't know if you want to, if we want to pause this or how quick the turnaround is, and I can cut this out. Or
will rebooting help?
I don't know. Are you hardline connected in, or are you on Wi-Fi? Are you close to?
Wi-Fi.
Are you far away from your exit? Like,
I'm right next to the Wi-Fi.
All right. I mean, we'll deal with it, I guess. Production meeting on air, I suppose. So,
yeah. We'll
push
through.
This part.
No, I'm going to leave it in.
I don't think he needs to. People like to hear this stuff behind the scenes.
Do they really?
No, I'm just saying they do so that we can just keep going.
Yeah, just cut this part out.
No, I'm leaving it in. I'm too tired.
I mean, I get it.
They understand. We're a ragtag operation here. We're doing the best.
It's free. Kiss my ass. No ads. It's free and no ads. Suck my dick. This
no
is what
Trent
you get.
Yoni.
We have no, we don't sponsor Illini Corner. We don't have any sort of sponsors for.
Who would sponsor Illini Corner?
Oh, buddy, I get emails.
Chevy's Tex-Mex.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute, you get emails about sponsorship opportunities and we never
but
hear
like
about
spam.
It?
Like,
oh, it's garbage. Like,
yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like just lower than dick pills. Like, it's the worst.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'd accept dick pills. That'd be fine.
Okay.
All would of you accept the pills or sponsor Illini?
No, I accept their sponsorship. I got a free manscaping thing for doing DeCipio's Dolan's podcast for a while.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Like, you got an actual tool, or you
I
got
the actual like box,
pube
like the,
trimmer
with the trimmer and the attachments and the whole thing. Yeah, the aftercare. Yeah, I got a free one of those for just hanging out with Dolan.
They email about just the no one listens to, like, it's not about the podcast. It's about the website, which you're not a part of anymore. And it's all just like a cold calling shit. It's not
anyway. Done with
anyway.
That. Slack. We've let John pontificate, sort of.
So. Give him a chance to get reconnoitered one way or the other.
Right now, Slack's been bouncing between utter delirium and complete rage.
Deliria, plural.
Delirium about the Bears, rage about Bears coverage. I think it keeps him balanced out, actually.
Uppers and downers?
Yeah, that sort of thing. Yep. But go ahead.
Well, I'm sort of... I feel like I'm tapped out from... Like, I can't keep getting mad every week, so it's sort of like I'm at a calm space right now because I just
Does it keep you grounded?
I don't understand why people like seem to think that they're smarter than the coach who came in here and took a dog shit team.
The coach everyone
and now
wanted
the
by the
number
way.
One seed with five games left. I don't get how that's not seen as wow, it's good now. Imagine how good it can be. And instead, they think about all these things that are wrong. We know what is wrong. There's a lot wrong. But that's not the point. The point is they're winning in spite of the things that are wrong.
Yeah.
And this should be fun. I think, Sam, I'm going to plug your newsletter here, which everybody should subscribe to. Thank Sam did much. A really good job talking
while
about...
While I'm turning down ad revenue.
Yes. He did a really good job talking about how... this is the season that we get to let loose and just go, well, this is amazing. I can't believe this is happening. Next season is going to be expectation. Yeah. And you're going to walk in
17
saying,
and up.
Well, you guys better. You guys. Well, next year is when we can sit here and do the preview show and I'll actually be able to say, yes, they'll beat the Raiders. You know what I mean? Like,
no, next year, next year you should do 17 and 0.
I could. We'll see. I think I'll try to keep it.
That's the Rosenbloom bit.
I'll do it regular style. But the point is, Sam's right. This is where, and again, I think I'm trying to also understand that there's a line that these people have to walk between, wow, this is fun. I'm having a great time covering this. Think of all the cool things that I'm seeing versus what draws clicks and eyeballs. So when you have a guy like Dan Bernstein try to parse out each individual syllable of Ben Johnson's quote about the passing game, over the course of 2 days after they just beat the Eagles 4 days ago, I'm left wondering, are you an asshole? Which I think the answer is probably yes.
Well, he's got his own OCD pathologies anyway with having to pick that apart.
Right. But if you know, we're in a day and age where if you have a headline on a YouTube video that just says something that's going to piss people off, that's more likely to get clicks than one that doesn't. So I get it, but it doesn't make me less annoyed that this is how we're treating one of the more joyous things that we've seen in the city sports wise in quite some time.
Let me play a bit of devil's advocate here because that doesn't mean I think Dan or anyone else doing this is right, but this is the same organization who you'll recall. And I assume it's the same, media team, PR team. I don't think that's changed. Who I don't remember if it was Justin. I think it was Justin's last year when he came out and he said, well, I'm not really getting any coaching. We're not doing the things that we do well and we're not making this offense better. And then they made him like seek out the media like 10 minutes later and clarify that. So the coaches didn't look stupid. You might recall that. And so I get it when you know, you have someone say one thing and then the next day feel the need to quote unquote clarify it with this organization. But it doesn't recognize the fact that, first of all, this is in reverse order. So this is the coach coming out and saying, this is what I meant. And he's the official mouthpiece. Two, a relationship between coach to player is different than player to coach. So it's perfectly fine for him to want to protect his player, where it's a little weird when the reverse happened that the coaches need to be protected because it obviously just makes them look stupider. So I understand to a certain degree why someone's antenna for that kind of thing might be up, but it's not the same thing. It's a different thing. It's a different dichotomy. And I have some patience, not a lot, for beat writers and writers and other people who do have to fill airtime by trying to fit this into a bigger picture. This was sort of the thing I was going to get into last week if we'd done a podcast where, you know, there's watching the Bears. We just tune in to see if they win or lose on Sunday. And Slack, I feel like you do that a lot, and I kind of envy it. You know, you just want to see if the Bears win or lose, and that's kind of it. And you're not worried about big picture stuff. And then,
well, why would I worry about that? I have a like actual life with things to worry about. Like I you know,
right? But you know, if you're covering this team full time, you have so much to fill. I get it. That doesn't mean I agree with most things that are written. I still think the Bears beat writers are constantly on the cross, and I don't know why, especially this year. This should be a fun job this year.
Well, because the last time it was fun, it ended in misery in the playoffs with Nagy. And
but everyone
kind of
sees it except for
home.
One ends in misery. Like, that's... Like, okay, 2018, okay, yeah, ended badly. That doesn't mean that we didn't have a shit ton of fun that season.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so I get both sides of it. And we'll get to Caleb in a second. Anyway, I interrupted Slack, and I apologize.
No, I think the Caleb question, which to me is not a question, I think is the most frustrating piece of this, because while if you want to go purely based off of statistics, you could spin that any way you want to fit your narrative, which is coded with decades of failure, and that's all you can see through. It's like you've got, you know, like you took put your sunglasses on, then smeared pork chops all over them, and you can't see anything. There's something happening here, and if you just look at a completion percentage and go, well, I don't know, you're really missing out on something, which is sad, I think, for a lot of people.
When was the last time you had pork chops?
I should get pork chops. You know,
I haven't had pork chops in I don't know how long.
I did last week because I made pan-fried pork katsu chops, and they were delicious.
That sounds great.
Very nice.
Get yourself some panko.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. So I think
a little bit of Japanese barbecue sauce.
Oh sure. I think that's part of my frustration, is that you can't turn anything on locally. Whereas here's an interesting thing for the listeners out there. If you're looking for coverage and you want good coverage of football, you need to go to those film dorks to get it, because they're the only ones who look at this and go, yeah, there's things happening here that are getting better. And when it clicks, it's going to be insane, which is the right way to look at something when you have a very talented person who's trying to get some structure that they didn't have before, versus, I don't know if this is the guy for the next 10 years. And this is a number one pick on his rookie deal. He's not going anywhere. It doesn't matter if you write an article about his completion percentage every day for the rest of the season. He's not going anywhere. He's the quarterback for quite some time, and potentially even longer than that. So, I mean, take the Biggses and the Cronenses and the Leasers. Get them out of your life. Don't read
them upstairs.
Go follow guys like Nate Tice. And go follow guys like, you know, go watch Mina Kimes. Don't just stay away from this local stuff is poisonous. And
don't watch Mina Kimes pervy now, because a lot of people
do
that.
No. Watch
Mina Kimes normally.
Yes.
All Mina Kimes repliers are all big Carly Rae Jepsen fans.
Though she does have an amazing taste in music, apparently.
Yes, she does. Big McCluskey gal is what I've heard.
Well, I... I don't want to go so far as to say I have a bone to pick with you. That's too strong, Slack. But I think it is fair to... How do I put this? It's fair to look to study or analyze Caleb's performances and say, okay, there's room to grow here, but you also have to add that he's made all the throws to help them win. That in every game they've won, he has made decisive plays. Now, maybe there are plays out there that he left out there that would have made games easier.
Right.
And that's fair.
It is.
And I think it is fair to say, when you say when it all clicks, it'll be great. I think it's fair to say when and if. I don't think that's, you know, too outlandish. But when you, if you say if, I don't think that means you are saying it will never happen. It's just like, we don't know. And again, the problem is when you're judging something that really can't be judged until it's 2 years in the future, well, you can't be 2 years in the future. You just have what you have now. So there are things to like. There are things that need improving. But it does feel at times that the Bears win and everyone wants to attach an asterisk to it or a caveat and say, yeah, they won, but they didn't win in the way we pictured it. So it doesn't mean as much.
And I'm not sure what that looks like, I guess.
I don't know what it looks like either. I feel like people just thought it would immediately be Josh Allen. Immediately Josh Allen.
I watched the Cowboys game. Everybody enjoyed the Cowboys game. The performance, the statistics were all where you'd think they would be. And what was the refrain after the Cowboys game? Well, this defense is no damn good.
Right.
They suck. So big deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
You put up 47 points on Cincinnati. That's the worst defense of all time.
I will also say, as someone who writes, not about football, I don't pretend to be a football expert, so I don't do this, but when writing about hockey or baseball or soccer, it is awfully tempting to try and use stats, especially underlying stats, to sound authoritative and the final line. So when people are talking about, well, this is the number that matters for Caleb and this is why it's not acceptable, I don't think football works that way. It is not baseball.
There's too many moving parts.
There's too many moving parts.
Like Dusty Baker's Matt, big guys.
Matt, Matt, you and I go through this with hockey all the time. You know, you can't use just one thing to define a player or a team. You can't always
carry the puck in. You have to dump and chase sometimes.
Like. Right. You'd rather carry it in more often, and those who do are better players, and that's why. But we'll get, you know, that's another thing for another time. So you can't just focus on Caleb's completion percentage without looking at the actual throws he's trying to make. And we talk about this on the Real Show all the time. You know, if you want him just throwing screens and dump offs and, you know,
check downs,
that's great. He'll complete 70% of his passes. I have no doubts. Who cares?
Doesn't mean shit.
It doesn't mean anything. And
you can game yourself into a QB rating that's high by just completing little passes and not making interceptions. And you don't have to do that much to get there. They're trying to make him play a very complex big boy offense.
Yeah, I don't know where it is. I don't know why there isn't one Bears observer who is just out here and they're just for the sake of it, just going to take the tack of, it's a process and he's making progress and it's going to be great.
They don't seem to think that Ben Johnson knows what he's talking about because he says it over and over
right.
again.
And like we can sit here and say, well, they've been conditioned by years of Bears football and Bears quarterbacks and Bears coaches. You got to be better than that. You know, like, this is not the normal Bears coach. This is the guy everyone wanted, and everyone sees why now. This is the quarterback everyone wanted. And, okay, we haven't seen maybe enough of that. That doesn't mean it's not in there. You can find things if you want to. It just doesn't feel like people want to. I don't know what it is. It doesn't – because it's not – you know, when people shit on Jay, I got it because, like, on the field he gave you more than enough to shit on, and he was hard to deal with for people – who didn't know how to deal with him. I've talked to a couple guys who covered the Bears and like, no, Jay and I got along great because I knew how to talk to him. I don't get that impression from Caleb. He's there every week. He answers everything. No one said he's ever short
He seems like a wonderful person as far as like he's never snapped on anyone. He puts a lot of blame on himself. He takes accountability. Right. He wants to get better. He says the right things. He's never thrown a fit. Like it's really interesting. I also think he gets shit on because Ben Johnson has put together a masterful run game.
Right.
Like that's
so
somehow
whatever
a
he does doesn't count.
Right.
And now he's, you know, he's being asked to do a lot of play action stuff for the first time ever.
From under like, center. Like he never right, he did not under play center. Under center.
Didn't they track it like a USC had like 12 play action throws ever?
They showed it on Friday, yeah.
Yeah. So you know, he's sort of learning a whole new language here.
Yeah,
Because he was coming. Yeah, and he was coming from Lincoln Riley's, you know, Lincoln Glanville's Chuck and Duck, with all these, you know, that has produced like all these like scrambly, weird, like half runny hybrid guys between him and Hurts and what's his name, the other Kyler, out in Murray out there, like among them. Caleb is the only one that's like trying to run the most traditional pro style offense that like Ben's run looks, and a lot of it again has to be predicated off of being under center. So it's not there's some RPO stuff or whatever, but like he's got to turn his back to the defense, and that's where, you know, he hasn't done that yet.
And also the context of him already looking like he's probably going to set every passing record in Bears history in a very short time.
Right.
Which apparently also, I mean, it doesn't matter because the numbers are so woeful historically, but also it should be acknowledged. This is as good as we've ever had it, or at least it appears like it's going to be as good as we've ever had it for as long as, you know, we will ever, right. ever had it.
I mean, we've talked about this a few times. It just feels like the people around the Bears observers, Bears Nation, you know, it's the path of least resistance, right? As long as you keep talking about how things could go wrong or will go wrong because you're seeing this and this and this, well, you're probably going to be right because the Bears aren't going to win the Super Bowl this year, and no one thinks they will. So you can do all this, and come January, at some point, you can claim to be right. You know, God help us if the Bears' playoff loss comes with Caleb not playing well. And I don't know. It just feels I don't need my beat writers and observers to be rah-rah just for the sake of it. I think that's equally detrimental to sports, you know, smarts fandom as the other side. But there's something disingenuous about it, I guess, is what's frustrating.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that the big story coming out of the biggest win since maybe 1988 is being overshadowed by a comment the head coach made,
right?
That got taken out of context before
fans,
a game against the most heated. You know, it's just right. it's so stupid. Whatever.
As fans, and this is what I wrote. You know, this is just all candy. Like whatever you wanted out of this season. Let's take the record away. You know, let's just wipe the record away before the season. You say, okay, I don't care what you think the Bears will go or what their record will be. And you'd ask every Bears fan, what do you need out of this season aside from record? Well, you want to know the coach is everything you were promised. And you want to see progress. And you want to see buy-in. Well, you've gotten all that. I mean, the Bears win games for the first time in our lives because their coach is smarter than the other guy on the other sideline.
He worked over Vic Fangio. Who...
right, he worked over Vic Fangio. Like, look, everyone knows who listens to this podcast. I love Lovie Smith. You know, and he had his bonuses or he had his gifts, but outsmarting the coach on the other sideline, I don't know if that was ever one of them.
No.
right? Like,
no, Lovie had a lot of fatal flaws as a coach where you would – where the Bears were losing games because he refused to grow or learn as a head coach.
Right.
In the nuances of like whether it was timeouts, challenges, those types of things, clock management. Right. The way that the Bears get down to games now is like
It's like a master class.
Right. Lovey's thing was like his players played for him and they did everything right.
Yes, everybody loved him.
You know, Ben does that, is working towards that at least. Obviously, they don't do everything right given the amount of penalties they had in the early of the season, but they're getting better. And
shocking,
he's outsmarting.
Yeah, and it's getting to the point where I'm frustrated when other coaches are starting to mimic Ben now and kind of do what he does. Because I'm like, right. No,
what,
damn wait, it.
What are you seeing?
One, the way that they load up their timeouts and they're saving them all for the last 2 minutes of the game. Everybody kind of does that now. I mean, the smart ones do. But just the way that Ben is managing the clock at the end of half and end of game. Well, not so much end of half, but the end of game scenarios. He's done a masterful job in terms of making
he's very cognizant of the wind in his coin toss decisions, mm-hmm, too.
That too. Yep. And then just knowing that, ensuring that they always have all three timeouts when they get to the last 3 minutes of the game, I think it is so critical to putting the Bears in the best position to win a game. And then not only that, but like if you go back and look at like all the games that they pulled out, they always had plenty in the bag. It was never anything where other coaches did something incredibly stupid that they took advantage of. It was always because he was always two, three steps ahead of them.
They're not winning games by coincidence.
No, right. No. And that's kind of what prepared, I get frustrated with when I see people talking about the Bears being lucky. It's not luck.
Right. This isn't last year when what's-his-face, Will Levis, you know, laterals a ball directly to you for a pick
please,
six.
Bill Beavis.
Sorry. You know, I mean, you know, they beat the Raiders. Well, they blocked that field goal. You know, like, that's not a miss. You know, right. like okay, they cough up, you know, the lead to the Bengals. Well, they make that throw to win it. Like, I mean, we could go down the list. Like, they stopped the Steelers. Okay,
well, people have said the Bengals were – that was a lucky win for the Bengals then? If the Bengals had won? No, they would have said, what a great comeback.
What a great – like, you know, okay, it's the backup for the Steelers. I'm not – you still can't convince me the Steelers are any worse off with Mason Rudolph than they are with Aaron Rodgers.
Well, that was a perfect game of another thing that Ben did. He was more than happy to let the Steelers take an eight-minute drive to make it a three-point game.
Right. Go right ahead.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, like the Bears are a flawed team. No one is sitting here saying they're not. Like I as I wrote in my article yesterday or Monday, I don't care for when people are like, oh, they're frauds. Well, they're only frauds if we're claiming them to be something, and no one is.
No one
like,
ever
I know
has.
I know the standings say number one seed, but it's not like Bears fans are out here. Well, we're all out here ripping off our shirts, but that's just what we do. I mean, that's just our hobby. But we're not saying, oh God, please pay attention to us. We are Super Bowl contenders. This isn't the Patriots.
Yeah, nobody. I've never heard anyone say we're better than the Rams. Clearly,
right?
Like,
no we're just having a great time. Like, but he is taking a flawed team, and he is.
It's
finding
almost
ways...
the same roster.
Right. He's taking a flawed team and just finding ways to win that week.
Reworked, but
you know, I don't.
And look what they're doing.
It's
incredible.
All right.
It's really special.
Before we move on to the West Side Hockey Club, we got John's so excited for Sunday. He's going to be covered in pig's blood at kickoff, alone in his basement, I assume, for the 3 days before and the 3 days after. I don't know. I mean, I'm probably going to be just as itchy as I was before the Eagles game, but now that the Eagles game is, I'm going to be sitting there going, Ben's going to find a way. You know, Ben's going to make it work. Like, I can't help it now.
I mean, he's going to try to find a way for sure. He's been thinking about this for a long time. And that's the encouraging thing is they're not going to go up there and try to do the same shit they do to everybody else. But at the same time, if you can run for that many yards against the Eagles, you can do it against almost anybody.
You'd think.
I know.
I mean, that was a defensive line that completely mauled the Chiefs in the Super Bowl last year. Same team.
I was expecting it to happen on Friday in some way, shape, or form. Like, I thought it would be very difficult, and they had no problem moving the ball. None.
I don't want to get out over my skis, but I'm going to do it. because why not? This is where we're at. It might be the most delicious it has been in our lifetime to be a Bears fan if this season, after the Packers make the Micah Parsons trade, everyone can't get out of their own way fast enough to declare them Super Bowl ready.
Especially after they dong whipped Detroit on opening day, too.
The Super Bowl favorite. Packers have finally stepped up and signed someone to a huge contract that isn't their quarterback. They're ready. And all of a sudden, in that year that they're supposed to be ready, they finish behind the Bears.
All I got to say is, if Micah Parsons is such a game changer, which, yes, he's obviously very good, then why haven't the Cowboys done jack shit while he was there? Every Cowboys fan, and I'm being a meatball right now, so you can look up your numbers and yell at me if you
meatball
want.
Meatball alert.
Every Cowboys fan will tell you that Micah Parsons was amazing for about the first 12 weeks. And then when it counts, he's nowhere to be seen. So it'd be a great time for him to not be seen starting Sunday at 3:25 p.m. Central Time.
My friend.
Now, you've probably just motherfucked him into 6 sacks. But that's okay. If there's ever a time to just put your face in and blow, it's right now.
You gotta do it. I've been saying it forever. You gotta dream big while you have the chance. Pretend like it's gonna be amazing. At least give yourself that luxury.
Everyone has this week because you see the number one seed next to the Bears, and you can't help but think, you know what? If all these teams are just gonna open the door, if they're gonna let you be first place in the North in December, if they're going to let you be top of the NFC in December, well, then maybe you just walk on through.
The door's open. They control their entire destiny, Sam. That is pretty sick.
And that, well, and it's also even sicker that it's all because Matt LaFleur was a bitch against the Cowboys and went for the tie.
A team that the Bears destroyed.
Right. Yeah.
Who apparently was so bad. This is the thing.
It's only a half.
I'm exhausted by this.
All it counts is half.
They're bad when the Bears beat them, and then when they become good afterwards, it doesn't matter, and nobody goes back and revises what they said.
No, yeah, it was a different team. They're a different team now. Yeah.
If the team was good and the Bears beat them, they're actually bad. Philadelphia actually bad. Pittsburgh actually bad.
I mean, Pittsburgh.
The Commanders who were 3-2. The Commanders who were 3-2 at the time with a healthy Jaden Daniels.
Yep.
No, they're just horrible. They're just a horrible team.
Which means when the Commanders beat the Bears last year, they beat a good team who then became bad.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if that was reversed, it was just a bad team who was pretending to be good until they became bad. I don't know. It's tiresome.
I mean, it's football stupidity.
But it's only here. Outside of here, like when the Bears win, I do my rounds. I watch the hits on the national stuff. And
because he can't let himself be totally happy.
Nothing but praise. No, it's universal.
Oh, the national
praise.
Yeah, the national thing. Yes. Everyone's on board.
Yes. I believe. I'm bought in. Blah, blah, blah. It's great. Not here.
Well, I think it shows you the amount of respect for going into Philadelphia and beating the shit out of the Eagles, specifically the offensive line versus the defensive line.
Yeah. I mean, that's because the offensive line had been a worry spot. And now now everyone goes into a game against the Bears like, okay, what are we going to do about the run? And we don't even have to worry. We're not even worried about
that's
how we're
going
to rush
thing.
The passer because
Vic Fangio was like, we don't want Caleb to beat us with his explosives, so we're keeping our safeties back. And he would not change it. And so they just said, fine, we're going to keep running the ball up your ass. And there's nothing you can do about it because you're scared of what Caleb could do. And that's true, even if you think he's terrible. That's how they're game planning for the Bears right now. And they're going to have to change it. And if they do, then there's going to be room there to throw.
Looking forward to it.
It's fun.
Do you have your pig's blood?
I do. I've got plenty of vats.
Also, yep. And I'll say this before we move on, the locker room thing has taken on a life of its own that is just so enjoyable. It makes Club Dub look like the Mickey Mouse clubhouse. It's just it's the coolest thing to be like able
well, I mean
to
I loved Club Dub, so
yeah, that's my point. That's like, how good this is.
Club Dub was also like a very local. It never like took off nationally the way this Ben stuff is taking off.
No.
With the national crew. Like even before he ripped his shirt off, the good, better, best thing started to get into the bloodstream and people were all in on it.
I mean, I definitely know it's what opponents and opposing fans will make fun of the first time they can. Yep. That's fine. I'm sure if the Packers win on Sunday, I have no doubts Matt LaFleur is going to rip off his shirt in the locker room.
I think he's going to reference the Ben Johnson quote from his presser. It's going to be a whole thing.
Oh, yeah, he's a total loser that'll do something like that. That's why he can't win.
But what I will say is it doesn't matter because Ben Johnson is doing that for his players. He's not doing it for the cameras. Okay, the cameras catch it. And he's not doing it for Kevin Warren, who wants to be on the cameras.
Always in that shot.
Well, by the way, that's the other thing, though. Oh, sorry, Sam, let me cut you off real quick.
Yeah.
The with more camera crews now in there, you're getting more shots. So there are locker room shots now where Kevin Warren is not featured prominently.
Right. No, he's figuring out where to place himself. He's got to readjust. But any coach that wins gets this, and there was a year where we thought Nagy had this and Lovey had this, but Ben's players, they're all in on that. They love it. And it's a lot easier for him to get all his messages across and do that when they know he's going to keep putting them in the best position to win. They might not come through all the time, but it won't be because of their coach. And I guess it must just be such a relief to these guys after a year of their coach doing the exact opposite. Just like, hey, if we don't win, that's on us. Last year we did everything we could and the guy in charge fucked us. And now it's a 180. And I imagine it just must be, they must feel like they've entered Valhalla. They're covered in pig's blood.
Yeah.
And silver spray paint.
They walk in the hell of all.
Yeah. And silver spray paint. All right. Well, we will switch gears. We will get back to our bread and butter, which is where we started, which is talking about the West Side Hockey Club, who are not quite as exciting as encouraging as the Bears, but not exciting as encouraging, even though they lost in a shootout last night. John, you said you had something you wanted to get out there.
It's primarily about Connor Bedard.
Please.
Is he the most talented Blackhawk of our lifetime?
Is Dennis Savard part of our lifetime?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that it's just between the two of them, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking last night. That only him and Savard are there in their own class right now. He's unbelievable. I mean, he tilts the ice every time he's out there. And he's
who saw this coming? Not me.
He's playing with. He's playing.
Out here doing the Caleb Williams thing about Connor Bedard. Like I was like,
this the expectation was for him to be like this. I think it just took a while to get here.
Mm-hmm. I don't think longer promised. Than we thought
because he was 17. He was 17 when like draft night.
The kids need to go look at Dennis Savard's career stats. By the way.
What's that?
The kids need to go look at Dennis Savard's stats just to get.
Oh, it's insane.
Well, '80s hockey is.
Yeah, but that's kind of coming back though.
It is
a little bit.
That's right. Yeah,
it is. Anyway, go ahead.
And anyway, Matt, you say he's playing, and he will need better line mates. But Andre Burkowski is a completely representative NHL.
Yeah, that's it.
He's
not going to get you killed. That's
not going to get you killed. He does everything right, but he's not anywhere near Bedard's level. And Andre Burkowski would tell you that.
That's why clearly he knows that by virtue of that. Like he's the only one that seems to think like, just give it to the kid, just find him.
Let me put it this way:
by just giving it to the kid.
Let me put it this way, John: the goal Connor Bedard scored last night. I can't think of another Hawk who could do that.
I can't think of another NHL. What, maybe McKinnon.
Who the hell could do that? Yeah.
Maybe McKinnon.
The reaction to it, and I watched it like maybe 30 times today, is just like people are like, I'm seeing comments from people who don't talk about the Blackhawks ever in any other way that's not like they're evil. talking about the shot in the release, like I don't understand how you do that. I don't get how that happened.
Kane never skated like this.
No.
Taves wasn't as skilled.
No.
You know, Roenick wasn't.
All different types of players here.
All different types of players.
No, so Savard is the comp as far as Hawks history.
But yeah, it is, at times it's startling. And, you know, he's still got lots of room to grow.
Yeah.
Matt was right in saying the more impressive play may have been walling off Mark Stone in his own end and ending a Vegas possession right there. He is doing things that I sat here last year and openly said, is this ever going to happen? Like, this is what was promised. This is what we said we needed to see, and we're seeing all of it. You know, John, we talked on the real show last week because, you know, we were talking, this is when they lost five in a row before they beat Anaheim. And you were like, well, if he puts up 90, 95, 100 points this year, regardless of anything else that happens, they can't be, what did you say? They can't be top three lottery. They can't be.
Right. Yeah. That's my larger point. What I wanted to get to. So thank you for leading me here, Sam.
Yeah.
For the type of season that Bedard is putting together and the way he looks right now, the Hawks can't do anything but accidentally finish in the hunt.
Correct.
At this point. If they're not in the hunt, then there's something else critically wrong with the organization.
Well, it's because no one's coming with it.
Exactly.
No, it really does come. Like John said, I think when you have a player this good, you can't be that bad. It's not possible.
You'll accidentally. Clearly,
he just willed them to fucking over the Ducks.
Right.
Prior
that
to
was
this,
his whole
prior
thing.
To
was...
the, prior to having that shot last night,
yes.
He just kind of and he put his dong on the table too for them all to see.
Well, that's the B side to all this is that he's become this chirpy, feisty little asshole, which just makes him so much cooler. Like
it's true.
Watching him hit that empty netter while it's in the air, telling the Ducks team to go fuck themselves, was just one of the most unbelievable things I've ever seen.
John, this is what I said.
That's
on
two
our
of the
season
snottiest empty netters in history. The capping off the last two hat tricks, by the way, the 20-foot high sauce dead center in the net from 175 feet away, and then basically giving him the finger before it's even in the net.
On our season Eve podcast, I said, look, everyone's saying, oh, well, it'd be better if they're, you know, they finish in the top three again and they get one more lottery pick, or whatever. And I said, well, if their kids are everything they say they are, they can't finish there. They're not going to finish there. Well, okay, he is, but all their other kids, except for Levshinov, who, you know, is all over the map, but is still does a lot of good things.
He's entertaining as hell, too.
He's so much fun. They're actually their other kids haven't been that good. Renzel's on his way to Rockford,
probably justify it. Like,
yeah,
necessary.
It's
easy
to speak.
It's not like we're shitting on the guy.
Toledo.
Okay,
we're not shitting on the guy. It's just like, okay, made this happen. And you know, Nazar's hit a wall. I don't know that what Nazar's going through is all that significant at the moment. I'm a little disappointed in his defensive work, like his scoring output. Hey, you know, that hit peaks and valleys. That's fine. I just thought he'd be more of a bitch to play against in his own zone, and he hasn't been.
Well, again, he's taking cues from, you know, a Cocker Spaniel puppy and a complete turd on his line. So,
And he's not even at 80 NHL games. We don't know. You know, we can't say. But Bedard being quite possibly a 100-point player this year, which
he's on
I
pace
never
for
saw.
120 for the record. Yeah, he's on pace for
I mean,
54
so
and 66.
So even if he falls off a little, which you'd expect, you know, he could be a 9,500-point player, which I honestly did not see coming. I thought point per game was probably the max you'd get. That balances out a lot of it, but I you know, John, I think about it. If he finishes with 9,500 points and they, you know, let's say they're in the hunt, like at the bottom of the hunt to the back of the hunt, you know, they finish 12th in the conference and sort of like 6 to 8 points, 10 points, you know, they sort of fade at the end there. But even if he puts up 95, 100, 105 points or whatever, there's your urgency right there.
Well, yeah, but you said, we said this at the beginning of the year because we didn't see this coming, to be fair. But we said they have to, if they finish in what, was it the 70s? Like mid-70s?
High 70s, be like, I think.
We'd say, okay, that's a good step, right?
Right, but I mean, I'm saying if he's among the NHL scoring leaders when the season's over, I don't know if it comes from here, but the national coverage and everyone around that's going to be like, well, you got to get this kid someone to play with.
Well, the national coverage has begun because I've never seen outlets talk about the Blackhawks this much since they were good.
Right.
And they're still probably not good, but they are getting talked about.
He's getting talked about.
Gushed over.
Well, I mean, Spencer Knight, there's outside, there's now Olympic team chatter around him too.
Mm-hmm. Right. But now before we get to America's favorite segment, if Bedard ends up, you know, he doesn't get hurt, stays healthy, maybe goes to the Olympics, maybe not, but finishes with over a point per game, whatever your total is, you know, is there pressure from the people who have been the most patient and preached the process and the plan? If they say, well, wait a minute, we've got a 100-point player here. You got to get him someone who can match him, right? You can't just keep waiting for everyone to blossom.
I just don't know how.
You got to make a trade, that's for sure.
It just feels like nobody is in sell mode or
the cap is too high.
You got to figure something out. You can't.
You got. Like, I mean, that's his job.
It's not my job. I guess is my point.
Yeah. You can't have a 120-point player and be sitting 20 points out of a playoff spot.
Right.
Do the Flames have anyone you could take? I don't even know where you look.
Like, figure it out.
I've gone on record. I'm on the Tage Thompson train.
He's very good.
Alex Tuck, if he never actually signs, that might be another one. He's a little older, but who cares? You've got room to make an overpayment. Yeah, but we've done that show. But yeah, and I think when you see Bedard on the ice being spicier, if he puts up 100 points, now he's been the good soldier in the organization, but if he puts up 100 points, goes off with Team Canada, you might see, he won't do it in public, but behind the scenes, he might be like, hey, enough of this.
Because he hasn't been locked in either.
Yeah,
you'll probably want reassurances,
right? Like, if you want me to sign for 8 years here, I need to know
he's gonna sign.
But it's gonna sign.
But it's a matter of how long they have the cost.
You could say, right? You could say
how long they there is a deadline on it too, because like when the new CBA kicks it, like they're able to give him an extra year, so he might just let him dangle, and then like even when he still get one more crack at it. So that like there is a shifting window here slightly, even if, you know, I don't know whether he wants to go to just, you know, max out his restricted years or whatever, but like.
Well, the interesting thing about it is everybody likes to compare it to the dynasty years or whatever. And that was two guys. You never really heard them mentioned separately. And this is a singular entity who's capable of reshaping this organization in his own sort of
wake.
Name. Yeah, just like he's the whole thing. He's the straw. So if the feistiness and the swagger that we're seeing on the ice is carried into backroom conversations, then it would be really interesting to hear what his agent and Kyle Davidson have to talk about when they sit down.
But I mean, his actual leverage isn't all that high other than name recognition. But if we get to exit interviews at the end of the season, and again, he finishes 102 points or whatever, and the Hawks are sore, you know, not really ever really in the playoff conversation, but they're not top three of the lottery. And he just says in his exit interview to the press, he just says something like, you know, next year it's time for us to compete. It's time for us to compete for a playoff spot. You know, I've spent 3 years here and I've enjoyed it, but I want to play games that matter. People are going to listen.
Well, listen, I'm listening to his little post-game clips too, and he is enjoying the fact that they're actually playing games that kind of matter and they're winning them. more than they're not. And it's obvious that it's making a difference in his entire demeanor, right. Everything. So clearly it's like, I got a taste of this, even if it's
mediocrity.
We cannot like go backwards from here. Like this has to.
Slack, he got a what?
What did I say?
A taste?
You got a taste. You got a taste of the title.
Thank you.
Happy to oblige. I'm yeah. It feels like an upward trajectory. Obviously there's other pieces around him that are ebbing and flowing. The Rinzels, if you will.
I mean, I don't think Rinzell's doing anything coming. That's unnatural.
No, you know, like that, no. But you know, you can bring up a little well-known guy who's hanging out in Rockford right now. You could see what he's got. I wouldn't hate right. that.
Are you talking about Korch or your lard ass?
I was both. Actually talking about Korch, but both. Both. Would be great. Yeah.
Both. I mean, both. You need scoring.
Yes.
Like they don't like I you know I write about this every day, and I feel like the Hawks do everything. Systematically that I want them to do, but they don't generate enough chances. They don't generate enough shots because quite simply, they just don't have enough talent, and that's fine. That's where they are, but let's bring up some talent. See what they got.
Your
Lardis's singular skill is finish.
Right.
Which they need.
And he's been doing it without Oliver Miller.
Yes.
He's got,
I was just saying,
he's got 22 points in 20 games, 11 and 11.
I was trying to write something last night, and I turned to my partner and said, we've spent so long and so many times calling him Oliver Miller that most often I forget his name is Oliver Moore. Like, I will write Oliver Miller. I'm like, no one's going to know who I'm talking about. I can't keep doing this.
Not everybody had the privilege of playing thousands of hours of NBA Live 96, but we did.
All right, well, let's get to America's favorite segment. John has been hyping this.
All right. Well, the hamster's on the wheel, but the hamster keeps maybe falling off. So bear with you. All right. So there's a post today. Somebody posted Black Pill Benny's article about Connor Bedard, the aforementioned. The headline is, it's clear now Connor Bedard will be a championship caliber centerpiece for Blackhawks. Okay.
I don't know about clear. I don't know about, you know, accepting that premise totally, being able to be that definitive on it, especially when, you know, Ben himself is like 18 years old.
Sure.
But okay, but that's the crux of the piece.
Yes, that's, and then the Reddit freaks take off from there. Okay, so somebody says he still doesn't even have great players on his wings yet. Once that comes, watch out. This is just the tip of the iceberg. Okay. Now this is where it really starts to get juicy here. Someone responds, inject the Frondell Bedard cancer off line straight into my veins.
Okay, nothing wrong with that, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Like, but like you don't know. You don't fucking know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's the Scott Powers hype machine at work.
This is where we're starting to get really good here.
Scott Powers is young boy.
This somebody responded, good gravy, it's this NBA season's been young so boys, good. It stopped obsessively. This season has been going so much better than I expected that I stopped obsessively thinking about how well our prospects are doing. Last season, that was my coping mechanism. I'm not going to sit here and say we're building another 2010s era Blackhawks dynasty because that's way premature. However, it's exciting to think about how this team could look when Frondell, Kantsaroff, and Lardis join up. I'm less enthused about Korch, but I haven't written him off yet. And our D looks solid, not elite, but solid. And then, so the person who talked about injecting a line into their veins responds with this.
Oh, God.
Well, if you're not following other leagues, there's a Hawks prospect leading or near leading basically every league worth a damn on the planet. Bedzy, apparently that's, he can call him that.
You're close,
obviously top five in points and goals in the NHL. Kantsaroff, third in points in the KHL and first in goals, pacing better than Kaprizov did at the same age. Lardis fighting for the points lead of the AHL. Clarissel, he calls him by his real name, top five in freshman points and goals. Wasn't on my bingo card this year, but after all that debate, he's putting up pretty much comparable numbers to Martone, LMFAO. Not talked about here often, but he could easily be a nightmare matchup for other teams in the future. Okay. Yeah, I'm sure. Vanacker leading the OHL in goals, and Frondell isn't quite leading the SHL in anything, largely because the coaching's a fucking joke, and I think KD should just call him up to stop dealing with it. But he is leading Dugarden in plus minus.
I don't think that's how it works, but okay.
Yeah.
Well, he's leading plus minus, so.
Yeah. And here's how he closes it off, which is the kicker.
Oh, he's got to close it off.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is super premature, but Davidson isn't trying to win a cup. He's trying to build a dynasty.
Ugh.
How about getting a team that could to finish over 500 first?
Good Lord.
So then somebody follows up this. I follow all the prospects, and it's crazy how deep this prospect pool is. No one is talking about Prids or Bem. I don't know who those guys are.
Prids right?
Or Bem? What about Mustard? Where's Mustard?
Yeah. You don't know.
This guy's Mustard.
You're right. Bem is also fucking frying, second in points, but there's so many kids lighting the lower leagues up.
I don't even know who that is.
Is it someone who is just who's a three name Quebecois, like BE, like
is it
Pierre Edward Melmar?
Bem?
God.
Bem.
Bem. Yeah, Bem is fucking frying, second in points, but there's so many kids lighting lower leagues up. Yeah, great. They're playing against 12-year-olds. Who gives?
No, his name is Bem.
Bem what?
Margera.
Bem Wallace.
Bem.
Bem Mustard. He plays with
Bem.
Kamloops.
I gotta work in the morning.
Oh, he's plays a Kamloops guy. Who cares?
Well, the Western Hockey League is the one I take most seriously.
I think juniors are dead.
I mean, they are. I mean, they're definitely stressed.
Just in time for your nephew to get there.
No, he's not going there.
He's not going there.
We definitely need to alert the authorities on this thread in general, because there's more, Sam.
Is there?
Yeah, they're talking about checking in with prospects, and then someone says, if you want some funny shit, I was doing draft research before the season started, got my heart set on Stenberg. I have no fucking clue who that is.
Arrest all these people.
Yeah, then realize there's no chance we're picking that early unless we trade up. Just a habit to start looking at the draft in August after the last couple years. So I'd have some ammo to cope. Still down to trade both of our first rounders and a prospect for Stenberg, though. Kid is a stud. No one's heard of him.
What?
How do you know? How do you? I just like Steve Stenberg,
the quarterback.
Stenstrom. Sebastian Stenberg Steinberg, the multi instrumentalist for soul coughing.
Is it Ivar Stenberg? Born in 2007?
I just want to say every time
that's
we talk
like the
about
same age as my son. Are you kidding me? Get out of here.
Every time Freak. We talk about the Western Hockey League, it reminds me of one of my favorite Slack tweets. And it was a response to friend of the program, Floob, who in his job, he was for some reason tweeting about his job. And he was like, I'm at Kamloops versus Kelowna and is on the blue line. And Slack's response was, what language is this?
There's more here.
I'm sure it keeps going.
Pack my asshole.
So somebody else responds. The defense has been performing pretty incredibly well to me for how young they are. Again, like
they're not young. They've got three 30-plus year olds.
The guys that we are assuming are here for the long run of Vlasic, Rinzel, and Lev are 24, 21, and 20, and already producing dang well. Apparently, didn't watch last night when Rinzel only got a shift in the third and was getting stuffed into a luggage headed for Rockford. I'm pretty bullish on Kaiser sticking around as a depth piece, and Crevier keeps defying my expectations. What were your expectations, sir?
You don't like Kaiser.
I hate him. Oh, no, I thought you said Crevier.
No.
Kaiser's whatever. Like, I'm not going to get...
he's a third-pairing bum slayer. Kaiser.
Yeah. He's just boring. Boring. Boring player.
High not floor, a low ceiling guy.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty much the gist of my America's Favorite segment. Good stuff all around. All right. Thank you, Andrew.
I got a couple quick ones. There's a post by this guy, Jay Peckin P, whatever. And it just says 17
Sam
min.
Peckinpah's son.
Yes. It just says 17 min to game time. And it's a picture of the Vegas arena sideways posted in the thread. So it's a big picture of the arena before the game, and it's sideways. So you'd have to turn your head or your monitor completely to understand what's going on here.
Portrait style.
Scrolling down to the comments really quickly. This just kills me. I think you could see better if it wasn't sideways. Gah, why post a picture like that? Looks cool when I tilt my head. I don't think the surface is even. Terrible post. And then this guy goes, can't satisfy everyone. Maybe I should take video in portrait mode for you schmucks. And he gets downvoted for it. So anyway, I just thought that was really funny.
What a bunch of wieners.
This one is great. This is the last thing. This is a quick post. I'm just going to read the headline here. This is from 20 hours ago. This man, the headline says, the third season blossom reminds me of Guy LaFleur. Guy LaFleur.
Guy LaFleur.
And this guy writes, yes, I'm so glad you're reading this.
And this guy writes, LaFleur, first overall pick in 1971 to Montreal Canadiens. He first 4 years were not what expected of him. His fifth season, he became the player he was meant to be.
He card read good.
What language is this?
Yeah, what language is this?
What does the third season blossom have to do with a guy from 58 years ago becoming good in his fifth season? I don't understand anything this man is saying. Hats off to him for entertaining me with this gobbledygook. Okay. A+.
I saw Guy LaFleur in the old stadium.
For the Nordiques?
The Rangers. John, you may remember he had a... Did he come back with the Rangers or something?
Something like that, yeah.
And so it was after my brother left for college, and I'm only like 8 or 9 years old at this point. But I told my father we have to go see Guy LaFleur because I just knew that we had to. At least that's what I'd been told. And I only found this out later. My father called my brother at college and he's like, do I really have to take this schmuck to go see Guy LaFleur at the stadium? I mean, like, well, you know, money's a little tight. And my brother's like, yeah, you kind of do. And I think the Hawks got absolutely worked that night, too. But he was worth the price of admission. He could still skate at 56 or whatever he was at that point.
I don't think I saw Guy at the stadium.
Well,
I saw him on a Molson commercial with the Strange Brew guys with Bob and Doug.
I watched the Hawks produced... special
on the stadium.
Yeah. It was fine.
I thought it was good. I enjoyed it.
It was good. I skipped the Bobby Hull section.
That wasn't very long. That was a minute and a half.
A minute and a half.
Yeah.
But, you know, the
just like ESPN
it,
skipped the Carter Hart section last night.
Yeah.
No, they didn't. They didn't skip it. I don't want to give them too much credit. The opening stand-up with Steve Levy in the booth, the cover starts, and he's there. They had the graphic for the whole thing. When he left the Flyers, why he left the Flyers, when the trial was, when they got acquitted, when he was signed. He went through the whole thing. You know, I mean, it's uncomfortable, but I don't. What's the best way to do it? Every time you mention his name, you have to say what happened? I mean
there's a Mr. Show sketch where that becomes a reality, which is one of their classics. So, I mean, you could.
I haven't seen that one.
I'll send it to you.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's clear the stadium means a lot to Danny.
It does.
Just as much as it does to I think, us.
Which makes me think there's a sliver of a chance we could get Danny on this podcast. We're the same people. By the way, John, I know it was eating you up inside. It was January 18th, 1989. The Rangers won 6-4, moving the 88-89 Hawks to 12-27-7.
And they still easily clinched a playoff spot there.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Didn't they go to the conference final that year?
Yeah.
LaFleur did not scratch that night. They were done in by Kelly Kissio. And a host of others.
Kelly Kissio, I believe, was once a Blackhawk for about 5 minutes.
Yeah. That's about right. Oh, I'm sorry. Tony Granato had a hat trick that night for the Rangers.
Local guy.
4-point night. Tomas Sandstrom, which was one of my first jerseys, actually. I had a Tomas Sandstrom jersey. He had a 3-point night that night. And for the Hawks, Dennis Savard, 4 points in a losing effort. A familiar refrain back then.
6-4, and all 4 points came from Savard.
Goal and three assists. He factored on every goal in a losing effort. So there you go. I know it was eating you up.
It was. Thank you for sharing that.
I will apologize to our listeners. We all spaced on sending out
I was in questions. Transit.
Matt was in transit. I was just in space. In space. So we don't have a question segment tonight. We take a week off. It takes us a week to get back in the swing of things.
And then we'll be taking a week off around Christmas, too. So
normal service resumed next week. We'll worry about Christmas when it gets here. Anyway, for Slack, for John, for Matt, I'm Sam. Thank you so much for listening and downloading. Please rate, review, and share, and subscribe to my newsletter, which you can find through my Blue Sky. You can find it at samfels.com. Thank you to Matt for that. But until next week, Top Guys out. I'm in a-